This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. Neil, the boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. I'm your host, Walter Rigobon. As usual, with me in studio, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz.
Good morning. How are you? Good, Wally. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much. Interesting show today. We're obviously a tremendous, tremendous victory by Brooke Henderson in the Canadian Women's Open, CP Open, last Sunday. It really was a win for the ages, and we'll be talking to Canadian golf legend Sandra Post about that remarkable, remarkable performance by Brooke Henderson last Sunday. So we'll be talking to Sandra Post on the show, middle of the hour, the voice of the Toronto Argonauts, Hoagie Mike Hogan. So it's the big Labor Day Classic tomorrow in Hamilton. Going to bring out the ghosts of Ralph Cesio and Bernie Filoni there, Naz.
Never Wynn Stadium. Do you remember that?
The old Ivor Wynn. Actually, before that, it was the Civic Stadium. So we go back a little bit further even than that. Remember paying a few, you know, heading down the QEW a few times to watch a Labor Day Classic, and some great names, some great rivalry between the Argos and the Ticats, and we're thrilled, of course, to talk to Mike Hogan about that. So that's what's coming up today. Interesting, all kinds of other things going on in the sports world. Very briefly, before we go on to a topic that you and I are passionate about. My beloved Fighting Irish took out Michigan yesterday, so I'm on a little bit of a high, walking on a cloud this morning, Naz. I watched Rudy pull up my Rudy tape this week. So beating the arch rival Michigan team is obviously a huge victory and a great start to the season for the Fighting Irish. Hopefully we keep that one going. And, of course, you're wearing your Alabama shirt this morning, and the predictable result, I would call it, from the Tide. They blew out Louisville yesterday. And, man, I watched parts of that game. Alabama's a handful, Naz.
They sure are. They were up 44-7 at three-quarter time.
That quarterback, the second-year guy, I can't even pronounce his name, man.
49-7, sorry.
49-7. Yeah, the quarterback there for Alabama, I can't even pronounce his name. Man, he's an exciting player.
Young, too.
Young player, too. And for all the Alabama fans who just, you roll from one season to the next, maybe that's why they call it Roll Tide. It just, you know, you got to give credit where credit is due.
The Crimson Tide is a religion in Alabama, Wally.
Yeah, you know, I can imagine.
It's unbelievable.
Well, there's religion in South Bend, too, Naz. <That's> of two types.
Yes.
So there's you know, they know there's passionate Alabama fans, but there's some pretty passionate fighting Irish guys, too.
Nick Saban can walk on water, that guy.
Oh, absolutely he can. So if we get a chance at the end of the show, we'll pick that discussion up. But from now to the break, let's talk about we haven't talked too much about the Blue Jays this year. Just because there wasn't much positive to talk about this year, to be quite frank with you. A lot of it injury, to be fair. You know, injuries really killed them this year. But their MVP from a couple of years back, of course, I'm talking about Josh Donaldson, is no longer a Toronto Blue Jay. He is now joined the Tribe in Cleveland. I'm not necessarily surprised that Josh Donaldson is no longer a Blue Jay. I am somewhat surprised that he's a Cleveland Indian, and I'm somewhat surprised that We literally got nothing for him. Naz, I know you and I were chatting on the air, off the air just before the show. You had some pretty strong words. I'll give you this opportunity to relay some of those words in a manner that you can over the air. So I'll turn it over to you, Naz.
Why would you trade an MVP type player to a team that you came from? I'm talking about the Shapiro and his gang. Why would you do that? I don't understand that.
Well, I'm sure the spin, because there's going to be a lot of spin. And there was an interview, I think, with Madani and Ross Atkins in the clubhouse that I saw on Sportsnet. Obviously, the Blue Jays management has to put out some spin to try and justify this one to the fans. And I think the spin is that he's no longer part of their plans, and that was the best offer they were able to get. Apparently, there were four other offers from four other teams, and, you know, at the end of the day, whether Shapiro and Atkins were part of the Cleveland organization or not at this point in time is largely irrelevant. If that's where the best offers come from, that's where you do the deal. Now, you made the point, Naz, better than I can make it, which is we don't even know what we got back, because apparently we're going to get this player to be named later. But I, you know, and we have to pay the Indians what, $2.7 million?
$7 million of the $3.7 million.
Right. So it's not like we saved. You know, what are we saving? We're saving having to put out a qualifying offer for Donaldson, and I think we're talking about $18 million for next year. But make the case why.
Well, let's
why make this deal now?
Doesn't make any sense to make the deal.
Why?
Now, I'll give you for instance, right? We talked about it. John Tavares has a broken leg and he's out for the season. He's got they can qualify him in the following year. Would you qualify John Tavares?
I wouldn't give that a second thought.
So why wouldn't you qualify the big guy, Donaldson?
Is the theory that you got to take that $18 million off the payroll and the Blue Jays are 3 years away? Why pay Donaldson? Why qualify him, whatever it's going to cost? I'm not familiar with the intricacies.
They qualify him, they get a first-round pick if somebody signs him.
Okay, so that seems to me better than this player to be named later.
Absolutely.
That they're going to get. But it seems to me, when the spin comes out, management at the Blue Jays are going to suggest that you know, they're just taking the team in a different direction, and Donaldson doesn't form part of that plan. They're 3 years away. And in 3 years' time, Donaldson's not going to be part of that. Although, you know, I mean, I'm not so sure about that. If they are 3 years away, you know, I think Donaldson might be, you know, a star that's, you know, in gracefully declining. You know, he's been injury has really killed him the last 2 years. In the second half of last year, even in his season last year, 24 home runs in an injury-marked season.
10 in the month of September last year.
So I'm of the opinion that Donaldson still got game. My sense of it is it became personal between Josh and the people who advise him, and between Shapiro and Atkins and Blue Jays management.
And they
took positions. They dug their heels in, and they rubbed each other the wrong way in a lot of different ways, and this negotiation or this relationship just completely got off the rails. And we go back, what is it, a year ago, 2 years ago, when we lost Encarnacion. We had that discussion. It's 2 years ago now, isn't it?
2 years ago, yeah.
We had that discussion, and, you know, those negotiations, quotation marks, got botched. Although, you know, I'm sure Blue Jays management wouldn't look at it that way, but... you know, when all got said and done, Encarnacion headed out of town for probably less than the Blue Jays would have paid him. So that didn't work out all that well. This Donaldson thing, you know, it seems to have got personally ugly at the end. Donaldson got shipped down to Florida, a couple of weeks ago? And you know, he's tweeting out that I've got things to say about management and I'll do it in my own time. And obviously, I would guess that that's going to happen at the end of the season. He's going to put his spin on whatever happened. But it just seems, you know, you have an MVP player and you allow this to go off the rails. It just, you know. I don't know. It doesn't seem to me that's the way you treat modern athletes.
The majority of their best young players came from Anthopolis, not from Shapiro. And you take a look at Guerrero. Guerrero was signed by Anthopolis, and he's the star coming up, right?
Yeah, and I got to think Shapiro and Atkins, you know, they got to realize that they've subjected themselves to a tremendous amount of criticism. The fan base, I'm sure, is not going to be too thrilled about this. But, you know, they're big boys. They got to go out and justify it, and they're going to have to justify and sell Blue Jays fans on why this is in the best interest of the long-term interest of the Toronto Blue Jays. Right now, I'm not seeing it. Time will tell, Ness.
I think they're going to toast him, though. That's what I'm hearing. That
he's coming into town this week, isn't he? Yeah. Aren't the Indians coming in?
They're not happy with Shapiro and his group, and he may not have a job at the end of the year.
Well,
watched the Gibby thing, too, right?
Yeah. Certainly they're in for a lot of. I mean, you see where the franchise was, you know, we had that run for a couple of years, and they've blown off the map so quick. It just, wow. It seems like yesterday Bautista was hitting that home run and having a scrap with the Texas Rangers.
Yeah, it looks like they're running the Bad News Bears.
You know, yeah, I don't know. Anyways, the story we'll keep talking about. Other story we want to talk about, we're going to go to break, and we'll be back with Canadian golf legend Sandra Post.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when I travelled to Italy to explore my Italian heritage. I have family in Caprese, home of Michelangelo, who famously painted the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. It took him 4 years. We must be distant relatives, because it took me almost as long to paint the ceiling of my garage. I'm sure he did a bunch of nudes, but I did 2 coats.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
Steels Paint in Woodbridge, an enormous 20,000 square foot superstore that carries nothing but the best. Superior staff, superior advice, superior selection, superior everything. When you have a really tough job to do, they can knock it down to size. They'll show you how to get it done right, and because they only sell the best of everything, you'll get it done to last. That means superior satisfaction. Steels Paint, 4190 Steels Avenue West in Woodbridge, the best.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
Are they ever wrong about sports? I can answer that in 2 words. Impossible. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto on the new AM 740. 96.7 FM if you're listening in downtown Toronto, and internet streaming www.zoomerradio.ca. Certainly our distinct privilege to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour Canadian golf legend Sandra Post. Good morning, Sandra. How are you?
Good morning, Naz and Wally.
Listen, thanks so much for having us, and I'm going to embarrass you a little bit off the top. I'm going to do what I normally do. I try to give my guests a proper introduction because when we talk with somebody of your accomplishments, we do want to remind our listeners the accomplishments. 1979 Lou Marsh Trophy winner, 8 LPGA Tour wins, Canada Sports Hall of Fame, Canadian Golf Hall of Fame, Ontario Sports Hall of Fame, Order of Canada, and voted one of Canada's greatest women athletes of the 20th century. Sandra, I apologize, but I had to do that, and thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Sounds good.
Tremendous, tremendous accomplishments in your career, Sandra. But last Sunday, Naz and I were watching it on TV, as I'm sure you were. Canada's darling right now, Brooke Henderson, 20 years old. A performance for the ages, I got to be quite frank, Sandra. And how she did it was probably more remarkable than her accomplishment. Winning the Canadian Women's Open, being the first Canadian to win it since Jocelyn back in 1973.
That's right.
You were watching it, I'm sure, or saw parts of it. Your reaction when it was all unfolding last Sunday?
Well, she just commanded it. I mean, starting on the Sunday, it was really hers to lose because she had the lead. But, when you sleep on your lead overnight, that's not an easy thing to do. Usually it's a sleepless night, and I understand she had one. But she went out the next day, and I think she really had a number in her mind. If she could get to 18 under, nobody could really catch her. And of course, she surpassed that and finished at 21 under. But at no time, sometimes when you watch golf, you know how you get nervous for the leaders? I don't know about you two, but I never once. I thought she had it really had command the entire time. And it was out at Wascana and Regina for your listeners who didn't tune in. And it really we talk about sports teams. They have a lot of home games. We have one home game. I'm talking about the LPGA. We have one home game a year, and then we have 150 some odd people that want to beat you, and that week. So it's really hard to win. It's really, really hard to win at home. Some women do. Some men do, of course. And I always, I really commend them because I tried the very best I could. I finished in the top 10 usually, but this was really a great performance.
Sandra, Brooke has a self-taught swing. Is that correct?
That's right. It's an overswing. She's about 5'4" in stature, and she's a former little hockey player, goalie, in fact. She's got those strong legs, and as long as those strong legs keep going, she's wonderful at impact. So she takes a 45-inch driver, which is very long for someone of that stature, grips down, and she's figured a way how. And her dad is her coach. Dave is her coach, and they figured a way how to get that driver out there around 275 so that she doesn't give up the distance with the naturally long hitters that are much taller than her, like the Lexi Thompson, Michelle Wee types. And then she's got a great iron game. And then when her putter is working, and that's the key, her putter was working. She made a lot of putts on those greens. And of course, I think, when the pressure's on, that's where it really shows. And so that kudos to the how many putts she made last week. And it was just a great finish. It was, it's not only just great for women's golf, it's great for golf in Canada. I think it's just great for women's golf around the world.
I'm talking to Sandra Poe. Sandra, there haven't been that many major championship winners amongst Canadian golfers. And Brooke is one, you're one, Mike Weir. There's one question. When we get legends on the show, this is Zoomer Radio after all. there's one question, obviously you're a major championship winner. It's a 68 LPGA championship. It's June 1968. I believe you had just turned 20 years of age,
correct,
if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, that was a major, and it was the LPGA Championship, and it was tied, and you had to go into an 18-hole playoff,
right,
with legend Kathy Whitworth.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what your recollections are of the evening before and the morning of, and a 20-year-old going up against one of the legends of the sport. And quite frankly, just to remind our listeners, you beat her pretty handily in the 18-hole playoff. It was, you shot 68 and she shot 75.
Right.
Tell us your thoughts, what it was like being a 20-year-old in a major championship playoff going up against one of the legends of the game.
Well, you know, unlike today, a lot of the players have their families around them. They travel with them. Like, for instance, Brooke has her sister and her dad and her mom travel with her. We didn't do that back in 68. We were just alone, alone driving a car. So I drove a car to Worcester, Massachusetts for my first major of my life on the LPGA Tour. And after 4 days, just like you said, the dust settled, and oh, here I was, tied with the greatest ever, Kathy Whitworth. Thank goodness I'd known Kathy since I was 13 years old. So, I mean, we were, you know, I mean, I was just in awe of her, nothing else. But, you know, she liked me, thank goodness. And so, of course, the media, they jumped on the plane. They filed their stories that afternoon on the Sunday at St. George's. You know, it was the Canadian Open time, and Bob Charles had just won. So they filed their stories. They jumped on the plane, and my dad was with them to Boston, and I picked my dad up at midnight because I wasn't going to be sleeping. And, you know, and the next day we all went out there, and as you said, it wasn't really quite that lopsided. She made a big number on 17, and we were close. We were within a shot or two the whole round, but she got in trouble on 17, and then I just had a nice walk on 18. But it was great. My dad was there. He had been my coach also, just like Brooke. And I didn't realize at the time, you know, when you're the first one, the first person on the LPGA Tour and first person in Canada to win a major, you don't realize that you're setting a bar or you're the first. You just sort of doing it. And that's all I was trying to do. I was just trying to figure out my career and to see if I was going to be good enough to play on the LPGA Tour.
Sandra, what do you think of the 18-year-old restriction on players playing in the LPGA?
Well, it was restricted for me. It wasn't for Brooke. You know, if you're a good enough, we didn't have this rule, but if you're good enough, like Morgan Pressel and Brooke, they go ahead, and what they do is they all they have to do is write a letter to the commissioner, and if their record is good enough and it shows that they could definitely and they'd belong out there, you know, there's ways of getting out there before you're 18.
We're talking to Sandra Post. Sandra, with this victory and the way that Brooke did it in her major championship, I consider that she's now joined what I call the Holy Trinity of Canadian women's golfers. There's, I think, three of you that have really separated yourselves historically. Of course, I'm talking about Brooke now, yourself, and Marlene Stewart Street.
I'd like to put Ada McKenzie in there.
Okay.
Because first of all, you know, Ada was a great amateur player and she won tournaments. But more importantly, I mean, she built a golf course.
Okay.
Toronto Ladies. And yeah. She went to the bank for the loan when they wouldn't give women a loan. And so Stanley Thompson, of course, the great architect who was building the golf course, he posed as her husband to get the money for Toronto Ladies. So, and I mean, here's a woman that she even redesigned golf clothes for women. So I really put Ada,
okay,
and then Marlene, and then myself, and then Brooke.
And I will defer to your greater expertise, Sandra. But there's something very important happening next year.
Okay, what?
In Canadian women's golf, where the CP Women's Open's coming back to the
right.
GTA, and it hasn't been here in a long time.
17 years since Annika won it, Angus Glen.
Angus Glen, and it's coming up.
I mean, we've had some ones that were close, you know, at Whistle Bear. We had the Manulife, and I'm sorry that went away. But, yes, people will have a chance, you know, to get in behind those gates and see that pretty golf course and see the best women golfers in the world, and that'll be fun.
What do you think, what's your assessment of Brooke's victory in terms of what that means? Obviously, you chatted, it means the world for women's golf around the world, but specifically in Canada. And going back to when you grew up as a young golfer, being a young woman or a young girl watching a Canadian achieve, you know, what some people thought was the unachievable, what does that mean for Canadian women's golf or for Canadian golf in general?
I think it'll definitely give it a bump. You know, it's just like when we have an Olympics, and they see our Olympians, whether it be summer or winter, and when they're successful and they're on the podium and they've got the medal around their neck. Whenever you see a champion, I think, not just Canadians, I think any country, whenever you see anyone, when we have a winner and a champion, a person that can win, and that it's not a stretch, that she or he could win any week, it always encourages people to tune in and to watch. And when they do, other little girls or boys tune in also. And so definitely they're given a lot of opportunity today, a lot more today. It's not a strange to see little 3- and 4- and 5-year-olds on a range now hitting golf balls. It was very different back in the early 50s when I was on the range hitting golf balls. But it's, you know, we really do encourage. I really think that there's, you know, it's a wonderful sport. It's a lifetime type sport. And I think there's just, you know, it's a lot more accessible than it used to be. And I think it's getting more diverse, and I think it's more far reaching. I think it's actually easier to get to golf and to be able to do it.
Sandra, golf is on a decline a bit with players. How would you change things?
It's on the decline?
Yeah, for not as many participants, I don't think.
No, well, we overbuilt in the 90s, the golf courses, and society changed a bit, you know, it became very fast and less time, and golf is difficult to play. But golf, like life, like politics, like everything, it's a cycle. It's a cycle. And I think actually it's on an upcycle right now again. And because when, you know, sort of financially things are good, golf is up. And I think actually golf is, it's never going away, and it's always going to be there.
Hopefully not.
I mean, but sometimes when people talk about it, you think, oh my goodness, you know, it's never going away. Oh. And so, it's a cycle. And I think when we just a little tip of the iceberg, I think when we have a winner, it helps. Like when Mike Weir, when he won the Masters, things were kind of down at that point. That really picked up, I think, sort of our spirit and everything. And I think that sort of gave golf maybe a little bump in our country. But, we've got the weather. We've got a lot of things to contend with. But it's still per capita. We're one of the most, you know, in the world. We lead, you know, in rounds of golf. So, golf is really quite alive and well. Sure, we've got some golf courses that are going on the way of the development, you know, especially in the GTA, you know, but it's because we really did build too many golf courses so quickly back in the 90s.
What do you think of the notion of having a 12-hole course instead of 18, so you're not out there that long?
Yeah, I love 12-hole golf courses. Right now, I'm involved with a little 12-hole golf course up in Port Elgin, and it's called Westlinks, and I love going up there. I love playing 12, because when you have 12, you can just play another 6 and get your 18 in if you want. Or you can play 6 and quit. I think 12 is a great number to have. I think 18 sometimes can be a little bit too long.
We've been talking to Sandra Post. Sandra, just remind everybody that you're still involved in golf. You have a golf school up at Glen Eagle.
I'm going to look at one of my students in about another half an hour and hit some golf balls and stay in shape. I'm going to be going to Ireland in a few weeks and going over there and playing 5 or 6 rounds. And I stay active, and I go out on the LPGA Tour and see the players. And, you know, I'm on the selection committee for the Canadian Golf Hall of Fame. I just love staying in the game, and I've been in the game a long time, but I'm lucky.
Anyway, Sandra, it's been a pleasure, certainly an opportunity to talk golf, that you obviously still have an incredible passion.
Tremendous.
And thanks for that little chat we had off the air the other morning. Apparently our paths may have crossed at Oakdale Golf and Country Club a long, long time ago. Certainly brought back some fond memories of some time I spent up there when I was younger, and certainly chatting with you has brought back some incredibly fond memories of your accomplishments, your significant accomplishments, and an opportunity to talk about Canada's great, great Brooke Henderson. Thanks so much, Sandra.
Okay, thank you both. Have a great day.
Always a pleasure. Thank you. You know, she was certainly a phenomenal golfer, and just the opportunity to go back and chat about some of her career accomplishments, you sort of, I wouldn't say you forget, but you're reminded of, she was one of our best of all time.
She sure was. Yeah.
Anyways, time for our break, and right after the break, we'll be talking to the voice of the Toronto Argonauts. Joining us in studio, Mike Hogan. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when I travelled to Italy to explore my Italian heritage. I'm in Modena, birthplace of Pavarotti. When I knocked on my cousin's door, he opened it and said,
"My long-lost cousin, you finally come home. You must now marry my neighbour's sister."
I said I had to get something in the car and never went back.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
At Titanium Logistics, we believe that choosing the right shipping company comes down to two issues, price and cost. Most prices are competitive, will likely save you money too, but the cost of choosing the wrong company to service your cross-border freight to and from the U.S. and Mexico can be extraordinary. If it's not where it should be, when it should be, that bargain price, worthless. Titanium Logistics. On time, on budget. Call 905-266-3014. Ask for Blair Downey.
At 20,000 square feet, Steeles Paint in Woodbridge is Canada's largest independent paint store. Big deal, right? Big deal, yes. The best brands, the best staff, the best advice, the best of everything. From color matching to brand selection, whether you're a pro or a DIYer, we'll look after you from the minute you walk in to the minute you walk in a second time as a completely satisfied customer. Big store, big deal, bigger satisfaction. Simple. Steeles Paint, 4190 Steeles Avenue West in Woodbridge.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the number 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
They never argue sports. They just explain while they're always correct. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. We're pleased to welcome to the show Mike Hogan, the voice of the Argos. Can I call you the voice of the Argos?
You can call me Widow. Get the mic going.
Oh, we haven't got your mic on. Hold on, that's my job.
There we go. You can call me whatever you would like.
Okay, we'll call you. We'll call you Mike. We'll call you Hoagie. We love you. You know that.
Well, I hope so.
Okay,
I'm a lovable guy.
We've listened to you. We've listened to you for so long. Talking about Argos football tomorrow at. Is it, what do they call it down there now? It's Tim Hortons
Tim
Field.
Tim Hortons Field.
Yep. We just had a little discussion earlier, and Naz said it used to be. Is it? You gotta help me out here. It's not the old Ivor Wynne got torn down?
Yeah, and it's
this is a brand new facility.
Same plot of land, and the floor plan is perpendicular to the old building.
Okay,
so you don't have to look into the west sun. Some of the receivers, I don't know how they did it. Sometimes just it was terrible. So it's a pretty windy building, but wind comes off the mountain. But yeah. It's fun spot. It's a great building.
I'm actually old enough to remember the old Civic Stadium.
Wow.
He is older.
Naz, you're only a year younger than me.
You said it.
I remember the old Civic Stadium. Anyways, let's talk about it's become almost like a rite of autumn.
Sure.
It's the Labor Day Classic. It's acquired its own mantra, its own branding, and it's the Argos and it's the Ticats. Mm-hmm. And I got a sense that, Ticat fans don't like Argo fans too much.
Really?
and they don't like the Argonauts. So exactly. there's going to be a lot of us making the trek down to QEW Monday, and they're probably not going to get a great welcome down at TD. But tell us a little bit about the atmosphere of the Labor Day Classic.
It's different than any other game in Hamilton. It brings out not only the diehards, but it brings out the peripheral Ticat fan that may still think Joe Zuger is playing. But
he's not.
But, you know, they come out once a year, and they know two things: to wear black and gold, and that the Argos suck. That's all they know, and they come out, and it adds to it.
Of course it does.
It's a loud building. It's a blast, and there have been so many memorable games on Labor Day. It just seems to kind of up the ante a little bit because of the added intensity of the Labor Day game.
What's your most memorable game on Labor Day, Mike?
One last year for all the wrong reasons, because there's a 2.5 hour weather delay. There's a lightning storm.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So Jeff Johnson was my broadcast partner last year, and we had 2.5 hours to kill on top of the game. so that was memorable. There was one in 2007. I think it was 2005, 2006, somewhere in the mid-2000s, where a fight broke out. Quarterback got involved, Michael Bishop, and it was Labor Day. It was just, the intensity was so high, and I think it ended up a tie game, but there have been some pretty memorable games.
Michael Bishop was the guy with the big arm, right? He was incredible.
Tom Brady Michael Bishop played at Kansas State, came into the NFL. Tom Brady to this day maintains that Michael Bishop has the strongest arm he's ever seen.
Wow. Talking about Ticat, you know, you get the opportunity. You bring in Labor Day Classic and all the great ones, and the rivalry between the Ticats and the Argos, obviously because we're so close to each other, and you know, that part of it. There's one distinct, and it's not a Labor Day game, but there's one distinct Argo Hamilton game, and I was really, really young at the time, and I'm sure you don't remember this one, Mike. It was a playoff game, and in those days, you know, the Argos would kick the ball. They needed to get a point, and they kicked the ball into the Hamilton end zone, and Bernie Filoni, the great Bernie Filoni, who was a quarterback and punter, punted it back out. And then Dave Mann punted it back in. And then Filoni punted it back out. They must have punted it back and forth. This is, I don't even know if it's on YouTube. They must have punted it back and forth about 5 or 6 times.
Canadian
until
rules.
Finally Bernie Filoni picked up the ball and he ran it back 110 yards for a touchdown.
Really? Oh, that's awesome!
You wanted to see the difference between Canadian football and American football. That was it. You just got guys punting it back and forth in and out of the end zone because, but Filoni says, enough of this. I'm just going to pick up the ball. And he runs it all the way back.
I love the rouge. I mean, a lot of people don't like the single point, and because every once in a while you'll see that. I called one, the Alouettes were in town when they were at the Rogers Center, and it was the same thing. It was kick in, kick out, kick in, kick out, kick in, and recovered for a touchdown. It was crazy.
Mike, Trestman is not going to address Carter for 2 weeks, right? For 2 games?
That's
why,
the plan.
Why is that? Is it that his offense and defense that complicated?
I think it's more of a test. To be honest, and I hate to speak for Coach Trestman, but I'll do my best. But for those who don't know who Daron Carter is, Daron Carter is a spectacular player who has been released by Montreal, released by Saskatchewan, and they say there's a problem. And the Argos are taking a chance at Daron Carter, but they want to see if he's dialed in and is going to do the things that they want to do off the field. At practice yesterday, he's practicing with the second unit, and he made two great catches for long gains when they were in practice, and you see the talent level. And I think it's just Mark Trestman wanting to see if he can trust Daron Carter. Mark Trestman doesn't hand out starting assignments. He says you have to earn it. And as soon as Daron Carter shows him that he can trust him, and that he's going to fit into the quote-unquote Argonaut way, he'll put him on the field.
Let me push that one a little bit.
Yeah, sure. No, absolutely.
Let me push that one a little bit. Yeah, we know that Daron Carter is a really good CFL football player.
No question.
Okay, so you bring him in and say we have to see if we can trust him. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
I think that that Daron Carter's reputation, and I've talked to guys who played to him. S.J. Green on the Argos, Bear Woods on the Argos, both played with him in Saskatchewan, and say that the reputation that he has is something that they didn't see in Montreal. So I think that they just want to see if he's going to be a team player, if he's
fair
a diva,
enough.
Right? You've heard the term diva receiver, right?
Fair enough.
Randy Mosses of the world, Terrell Owens, guys like that, south of the border.
Yep.
They want to see if he's like that. Mark Trestman won't put up with that. Mark Trestman will release him if that's a problem. So if that continues, or starts, because we haven't seen it yet. But if Jerron Carter shows he's a good teammate, because we know the talent's there, he'll put him on the field.
Because he can play corner too, right?
Yeah.
He's an amazing athlete. He can play both.
He's fantastic.
Both ends.
Labor Day Classic, Argos and Hamilton. There's a return match.
Yeah, on Saturday, a week from yesterday. October 8th, it's a 1 o'clock kickoff at BMO Field. And great spot. If you haven't been to a game at BMO, I know you guys – is this the one you guys are coming to? Because you guys were looking down the schedule and saying that
we're
going to go to a game.
The 20th of October.
Oh, we're waiting for we're waiting for the Manziel. Hopefully, I got a feeling we're going to make it. We're going to make it there earlier than that.
Awesome.
I'm going to try and get down there more than once.
It's
because it's a great facility. Mm-hmm. Autumn's you get a beautiful autumn afternoon. There's nothing better.
Absolutely. And the other thing that's going to add to next Saturday's game is there's going to be a boatload of people coming down from Hamilton. So that's going to add to the vibe and the excitement of the building. And those games are fun in either
building. But from a football perspective, these are very important games because the Argos record isn't the best, but we're fighting for a playoff spot.
Game behind Hamilton right now.
Right? And, if Argos manage to squeeze out two victories out of these two games, we're back in a playoff spot.
Yeah.
So they're, from a football perspective, they're very, very important.
And everybody on that team realizes the importance of these two games, especially since the Argos lost against Montreal, who seemed to be coming around. They beat Ottawa on Friday night. So there's no pushovers anymore. And the difference in talent between first and worst in the CFL is a lot closer than I think a lot of people give it credit
Mike,
for.
Mike, the Alouettes have really improved on defense. Oh, my God, it's a different team. What happened?
Absolutely.
What happened?
I think they're finally getting the scheme, and the talent is being allowed to be the talent. There are a few guys on that roster who haven't played in the CFL before, kind of getting used to the nuance of receivers in motion and things like that. So Mark Trestman and the staff last week were adamant. And they kept saying, this is a much better team than has shown on paper so far this year. So they found out firsthand that was the case.
We lost Ricky Ray.
Mm-hmm. He didn't die.
No. not literally.
Yeah.
Figuratively, as a football player, maybe. So it doesn't appear that he's back this year and may never be back. We don't know. We don't know the answer to that. So the fate of the Argos' fortunes from now till the end of the year in the hands of McLeod Bethel Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
A few times I've watched him. He seems to be doing a pretty good job out there. Seems to have settled into the role. Tell us your impressions of him and how he's taken over the team.
I think he thinks the game kind of the way that Ricky does. He's a drop back passer who can run a little bit if he has to. Johnny Manziel is a guy who in college, if there was a 7-yard opportunity to throw the football and it was like a 70% chance he was going to complete that, he'd go, I'm going to look downfield, and he's going to prolong the play and make it longer and maybe try for that high-risk, high-reward play. That's not Ricky Ray. That's not McLeod Bethel Thompson. If the play is there, if he'll take that 7-yarder and go for 2nd-and-3. So he's a very precise quarterback with a very big arm. And, I'm waiting for the opportunity to see if they start taking a couple of shots deep because he's got that arm. And, they've got some receivers, and when Jerron Carter gets into the lineup, and there's talk now that Devere Posey, who was released by Baltimore, that he may come back, and he was the MVP of the Grey Cup a year ago. There's another good receiver. So, you give McLeod Bethel Thompson a receiving core that they could have in a couple of weeks. Wow.
Mike, it seems to me the running attack is not as good as it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the offensive line, or...?
It's funny because last year, James Wilder Jr. is the running back, and he exploded last year. And it was big run, 20-yard run, 30-yard run, 80-yard run. He hasn't had the big over 20-yard runs.
No, not at all.
So from the 0 to 10-yard range, it's very similar. He gets 7 yards, 6 yards, 8 yards fairly religiously, but he hasn't broken the long ones yet. I think that's there. We just haven't seen it yet.
Mike, this time last year... we wouldn't have thought that necessarily the Argos would have been Grey Cup contenders.
Exactly.
And then they managed to pull it together at the right time. How do you assess this team as compared to last year's team, both in the sense from the collective talent on the team and where they are compared to where they were last year.
I think the biggest difference is Ricky Ray. They don't have Ricky Ray, and that's, you know, he's one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play in this league, period, full stop. And he is among the smartest players to ever play in the league, and you've got a quarterback who's a first-year starter in pro football. He's been around the NFL for a long time. It's his second year in the CFL, but it's always been as a backup. That's probably the biggest difference. Talent-wise, the offensive line is the same. The receiving core is mostly the same. There's been significant change on defense, but they brought in a lot of veterans, a couple of whom have been either injured or moved in one case. So I think there are a lot of similarities. The coaching staff with Mark Trestman is still in place. A couple of guys have been promoted from positional coaches to coordinators because the two coordinators left. So it's essentially the same group. And, you know, Mark Trestman is all about the word process. And, you know, it's a daily improvement. And as long as he's seeing that, he's a happy guy. And I think we've seen some improvement, especially on the defensive side of the football from the beginning of the year. The special teams has been much better the last three games. So we'll see. It is a process, and we'll see what happens. But these two games against Hamilton will go a long way to telling the story on what we're going to see in November.
Do you think Manziel will be back in the lineup for Montreal at any time?
I don't know what they do there.
They seem to be more successful at the back.
The Pipkin kid's been awesome. Yeah, he's been out of nowhere. Like, when he was starting, I went, who's this guy?
He runs the ball like a halfback.
Yeah,
he's incredible.
He's big, he's fast, he's got a good arm, but it's Johnny Manziel. And this might come down to, you know, what the coach wants as opposed to what the general manager wants, right?
Because somebody wants to put fans in the seats.
Yes.
Okay. And yeah, he did drive a little bit of a bump in attendance. You know, people just want to see, well, you know, everybody loves a redemption story, right?
Sure.
And they want to, and he seems to have a CFL type of game.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to see how he can do. I mean, Heisman Trophy winner.
And
he's got star. He's got star power, right?
And every movie is better if there's a good villain, right? And whether you love Johnny Manziel and want him to succeed wildly,
yeah,
or if you want him to fail miserably, he's a character. There's not a lot of guys in the league can do it to that extent. Daron Carter's another one.
Yeah,
he's got fans. He's got detractors.
You gotta have stars.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to put fannies in the seats.
Mm-hmm.
You got to give. You know, it's like you know, and we've said it all the time. You know, nicknames. You know, you got to identify with the players.
Mm-hmm. And Manziel's a guy who can do that.
And Daron Carter's going to do it if he can manage to, you know, keep Trestman happy and fit in with the team. You know, people are going to, you know, they'll tune in to watch Daron Carter.
And we did a podcast for Argonauts.ca this week. I had a 20-minute sit-down with Daron Carter, and I didn't know what to expect. You know, I'm kind of like every fan. I saw him from afar. I'd never interviewed the man. I was blown away by how personable he is. Like, he seems like a really decent guy who is learning from some mistakes. And we, in the course of our conversation, I said, when I was in my 20s, I got fired twice. I thought I knew everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's very difficult for me at that, because of that history, to be very judgmental of this kid who made some mistakes.
He comes from great genes, not good genes, great genes.
His dad is Chris Carter, one of the greatest receivers in the NFL, and you're going to point out Uncle Butch?
Uncle Butch. How are you, Butch?
Coach of the Raptors for quite a while back in the Vince,
yeah.
Vince Carter.
Too, yeah.
Friend
yeah.
of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour.
Absolutely.
We've had him a few times. We're going to move on now, Mike.
Okay.
We've got a few minutes left. And this is a topic, it's going to start next Sunday.
Okay.
And the Buffalo Bills. Naz is our Buffalo Bills guy.
Yeah,
he's wearing his Alabama shirt today.
Alabama, Buffalo. What a loser, huh?
Okay.
What? Not the
well,
second.
You know what? I got to tell you, Mike, I'm a fighting Irish guy, and I'm getting tired of this guy rubbing it into me.
Oh, I bet.
He's been rubbing it into me for years, right? But I cannot.
Louis. I think that was Louis,
you know,
not
what?
Me.
You and Louis, okay? I got to deal with these Alabama guys when they come in, and, you know, and fighting Irish, we haven't had much to cheer about for the last 25 years, other than my annual ritual of watching my Rudy tape.
I would rather have Rudy on my team than Forrest Gump, okay?
we actually had Rudy on the show about 3 or 4 years ago, and I was actually chatting with him this week. We're trying to get him on again.
Oh, great.
The interesting thing about the Rudy movie is it's 20. It got re-released in the States this week because it's the 25th anniversary of it.
Oh, okay.
But what's being long forgotten, it was the closing film in the 1993 Toronto International Film Festival.
Yeah, I've spoken to Rudy a few times over the years as well, and he's very fond of Toronto for that reason.
For that reason, yeah. So
great movie.
So college football started yesterday. Buffalo Bills are going to start. Naz, I don't know. I was checking my Twitter feed yesterday, and I couldn't believe what I saw. Did they trade McCarron?
They did. Yeah.
Okay. Raiders.
Can somebody please explain, Naz, Mike, explain the rationale behind getting rid of Tyrod, bringing McCarron in? You got a rookie. You got the guy from Seinfeld. I'm sorry, I had to throw that in. Nathan Peterman. But I got to, with all due respect for Peterman, he does look better this year. So what?
Couldn't look
what?
Worse than the one game he had last year.
Against San Diego? Yeah. Five interceptions first half. So please, Naz, you're our Buffalo Bills guy. I'm a Bills fan too, Mike.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I know. But how does that make any sense?
Well, they were happy with Peterman. They're not going to drop Allen. And they only go with two quarterbacks, so they have to move him. They had to move McCarron. They have no choice.
But wasn't the theory you were going to go with McCarron? Peterman was going to sub in, and Allen was going to sit and watch and with the clipboard, and he was going to get some injury time minutes in the last 3-4 minutes of the game to learn how to be an NFL quarterback. That's all out the window because they're vulnerable now. Because if Peterman goes down. Because, you know, what are the chances a quarterback's going to last an entire year nowadays?
Well, they don't carry three quarterbacks anymore. They used to, but they don't anymore. They carry most of the teams carry two.
They'll carry three, but dress two.
Yes.
So you'll have that guy on the practice roster.
That
they
part.
Need a third quarterback.
Yeah. But they knew when they were bringing McCarron in, you brought him in, you know that you, what are you going to do? You're going to trade Peterman at some point? I don't understand the logic behind what they did. What'd they get for McCarron, by the way? Nothing?
This
looks like Josh Donaldson trade. I mean,
6th-round pick or something.
Yeah.
Anyways, late draft pick. Your impressions of that move, Naz? Well, I appreciate you don't carry three. I think Mike's right. You carry three, but
McCarron,
you only dress two.
McCarron usually played on Thursday night and looked great in the fourth quarter.
So why trade him?
But he's playing against the third and fourth line players.
Okay.
He looked horrible the rest of the time.
What's your assessment,
I'm an Alabama
Mike?
Guy, and I never thought he'd make the NFL.
I'm with you 100%. I've never understood the hype around A.J. McCarron as a quarterback. There are guys who are really good at the college level, and they don't have the skill set to make it to the pros. And to me, that was McCarron. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a great story, and Brent Musburger made his girlfriend very famous.
Got himself in trouble over
exactly.
that, too, by the way.
But McCarron, to me, was a guy who played behind a spectacular offensive line at Alabama.
Offense.
Like, maybe the best offensive line college football's ever put together, which gives him a lot more time. And as a pro, he just, I don't know.
No, he hasn't been a great pro.
No.
But I got to think he's better than Peterman.
But if you think you have a guy who's just as good, and I hate to use the term just a guy.
Yeah,
but to me, A.J. McCarron was just a guy. He was a guy that could come in and fill a roster spot. And I think you can find those guys. And if they have a guy who they think is similar, maybe has a bigger upside than McCarron, if you can get
something. Oh, you mean
you're
going to go find him in the trade market? Oh. Or somebody else dumped somebody?
Sure, absolutely. Or we've got, I don't know how many guys. To be honest, I don't know. I didn't watch the Bills very much in camp.
Yeah.
I don't know how many guys they brought in. They may have had five quarterbacks in camp, thought that McCarron wasn't discernibly better than any of the other ones, could get a draft pick for him. To help them out down the road, and they just take, okay, we don't like McCarron, let's slide this guy up a notch on the depth chart. You know what I mean? But like I say,
if you get the part of that I've watched Josh Allen, he may be the Bills quarterback of the future.
Sure.
But you start him, you throw him in as a starter now.
He might not be ready.
No, he's not ready.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it. I don't see it. I mean, you read these reports. Oh, he had that one fantastic throw, that 60-yard throw in that one game. I mean, come on. You're going to evaluate a guy based – I mean, the guy's got to learn to be in it. I mean, Aaron Rodgers spent how many years on the bench with Brett Favre?
Sure, but that's because Brett Favre was there. And I don't mean to talk about Allen in the same terms as these players, but we've seen Hall of Fame players come in and absolutely be terrible in their first year.
Yeah.
Troy Aikman was awful. Peyton Manning was horrible in his first year, but they learned. And there's that aspect where some coaches will want to throw the kid to the fire, and then there are others. Carson Palmer was the first overall pick, and he didn't play a snap in his first year. So there are two different ways of going at. I don't know what the Bills' philosophy is going to be.
We don't know, and we're out of time. Naz, I always give you the last word, so be my guest.
Have a good week, everybody.
Mike, I was going to say something nice about Notre Dame.
Are you crazy? Mike, Mike, thanks so much for joining
Anytime.
Us. We'll stay in touch.
That.
Go Argos.
Thank you, sir.
To all our listeners, have a fantastic week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.